Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 27. Attack by Chandavega on the city of Paranjana, text 19. Translation. My dear King Prachina Barhishut, at this time, the daughter of formidable time was seeking her husband throughout the three worlds. Although no one agreed to accept her, she came. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. In due course of time, when the body becomes old and practically invalid, it is subject to jara, the sufferings of old age. There are four basic kinds of suffering: birth, old age, disease, and death. No scientist or philosopher has ever been able to make a solution to these four miserable conditions. The invalidity of old age, known as jara, is figuratively explained here as the daughter of time. No one likes her, but she is very much anxious to accept anyone as her husband. No one likes to become old and invalid, but this is inevitable for everyone. Om Agyanatimirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Today we'll speak about what constitutes a valuable life, and also how time passes imperceptibly because of the inherent or essential condition of material life, which is forgetfulness. First of all, what about a valuable life? Everyone wants to have a feeling that their life will be successful, it will be fulfilling, you'll get most of what you're due, and you won't have to suffer so much. Everyone wants to have a worthwhile life. We can see this is particularly so in places like the USA, where people expect to do more than just survive and hold on. They expect to be able to expand their sense of meaning and significance. They have hopes for themselves. And naturally, to achieve those hopes they have, they expect a long life. If life can be long and you have what you consider to be ample opportunity to pursue your goals, then you think you're going to be satisfied. Actually, the truth is, no one dies thinking, all right, I've achieved all my goals, now let there be the end. They may say like that, but what actually happens at the time of death is all your attachments built up throughout your life just hit you all at once. You can't hide from the wreckage of what one has done during life. You may say, okay, I've achieved enough. I've had some fun. I've fulfilled myself, followed my fancies, and so now I'll just move on. That is a popular folk conception of what happens at death. But actually, no. Because of sinful activity, there's so much attachment built up. Even if there's pious activity, which is rare in Kali Yuga, even if there's pious activity, there is a mountain of attachment that has been constructed. So this attachment, this mountain of attachment, sits upon you at the time of death. And you take another body to deal with the reactions of all those attachments. In other words, living in this world is not just like a cabaret or a carnival. It is serious business. The business of action and reaction is unavoidable for one who operates under the influence of the material energy. Therefore, if we're going to judge what is a successful life, we cannot simply look at the length of the life. In fact, the length of the life is not very important at all. This is the point made by Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto of Bhagavatam. He asked the question, Kim pramatasya bahubi parokshaya vairanayaha? What is the use of a long life wasted by years of inexperience in this world? Better live just for a moment, if in that moment one is Krishna conscious. This is how we evaluate things as devotees. We're not looking for the long life. We're looking for the Krishna conscious life. In order to encourage Prichit Maharaj, who was cursed to die in 7 days, Shukadeva Goswami spoke this verse. Besides, naturally, wanting to make the point for the benefit of conditioned souls, Shukadeva Goswami is also personally encouraging Prichit Maharaj. 7 days is more than enough time to achieve the supreme goal of life. You have 7 days. Make the best of it. It is not the length of the life that counts. It is whether that life has even a moment of Krishna consciousness. Our whole preaching is based on this point, that even if someone just performs a moment of devotional service, their life becomes far more successful than the greatest persons this world glorifies who lack a moment of devotional service. People today take great pride that it seems the lifespans have increased. Of course, they don't take into account the number of abortions. People, when they live to their 80s, 90s, suffer so much. The last 20 or 30 years of their life are practically useless, because they didn't know what to do with their life when they are younger. They reap the ill effects of such a misguided life. And therefore, the last 30 years of their life, from 60 to 90, are completely wasted, just like the first 60 years of their life were completely wasted. If you would actually know about the suffering that these elderly people have, who by the grace of scientific advancement can drag on into their 90s, if you actually knew the quality of their life, you would not consider it a great achievement at all to have a long life. The pain, the mental agony of having the same desires as a young person, but the body is unable to carry out those desires. This pain is terrorizing. You can't conceive of what that pain is like as a materialist, to have all the material desires, but your body can't execute any of them. You actually become deranged. If you don't become outwardly crazy, you seal yourself off from the world and just practically live like a stone. This is how deadly the time factor is. I know in the case of my father, he lived till he was about 80, I think, 81. And he could not accept the fact that it was over. He was 78 years old, and he's ordering my brother, who's a doctor, bring my credit card. I want to go out and buy a red BMW. My brother had to tell him, you know, those days are over for you. You know, you're not a sporty young man anymore. He just thought, my father thought, what's the problem? I have money. I want a red BMW. I can drive around at 78 years old. Because he was a retired administrator in the New York City Police Department. He was driving until the very old days, because whenever the cops would pull him over for doing something erratic, you know, as someone who's 77 or so would do when they're driving a car, he would just show his retired police force card and they would let him go. So my brother, the doctor, had to go to the police department and say, will you please lift his license and keep him off the road, you know. So then there was another crisis. They have these ladies who go around looking for wealthy men or men with some kind of money, old men, and they, you know, they give them a few winks, give them a few hugs, and then they, you know, they take, you know, they ask, you know, they extort the guy's retirement money from him. You know, some ladies make their living in this way. So one of those was, latched on to my father. He prided himself on being a ladies' man. And so, you know, she would wink at him a bit, give him a few squeezes, and, you know, old guy, you know, still, mind still lusty, he would become very enlivened and, sure, sign over all his money. Yeah, take it all. So again, my brother was a doctor, had to intervene, had a background check done on this lady, and sure enough, she had already ripped off 10 senior citizens in the same town. So he had to go personally and tell her, just disappear. What life is like when you don't deal with your material desires when you're young. Now, you may think, I'm young, so I should now absorb myself in material desires, and later when I'm older, they'll all naturally slide away. No. When you are old, you pay the price for all the sense gratification and uncontrolled material desires that you let overrun you when you're young. So I can see, like in the case of my father, he was 79, he's in a nursing home, and he's still trying to, make some fast talk with the lady nurses, and he still conceives of himself as an enjoyer, even though the body is finished. Why is it that we are unaware of the effects of time? This is the nature of Maya. In other words, this is how the material energy operates. It moves, it does things, but it doesn't let you see. We're so proud of our imperfect senses, we think that if anything's happening, I can see it. If someone's going to try to cheat me, if someone's going to try to, to make some moves, I see it all. I'm experienced. I'm a mature person. No one can pull the wool over my eyes. I see what's going on. This is the pride of the conditioned soul. Meanwhile, what is happening? Time is ripping us off. And we don't see it, and we don't care. Lord Kapila Dev explains that just like the mass of clouds is unaware of the wind in the sky, at any moment, that wind can come and blow the clouds out of existence. Similarly, Lord Kapila Dev says, the living entity is unaware of the power of time, which at any moment will end his life. Time doesn't simply end your life. It causes deterioration. But because forgetfulness is an essential part of material life, we don't see what's going on. Forgetfulness means you can't remember your past death. You can't remember life in the womb. And you can't see that once again time is cheating you. The greatest fortune is to put your youthful energies fully into Krishna conscious activities and the Krishna consciousness society. Do that while you're young. You will be so grateful when you're old. You may not understand that now. If you just invest very solidly in the 9 processes of devotional service, invest your heart and intelligence in Krishna conscious activities with a spirit of sacrifice. When inevitable old age comes, if you live to old age, you'll be so grateful. Now you may think, oh, what's the big deal? I'm in my 20s or 30s. Should I stick to full absorption in Krishna consciousness, or maybe I should pursue other options? But you have to consider what you'll be thinking 30 years from now. And you can see that those senior devotees, those devotees who stuck to the process of bhakti decade after decade, they're so grateful. Because once it hits you, once you realize that you are in the grip of time, your body at least, and then you can see, I spent all my energies for Krishna. You're so content and spiritually satisfied. I didn't get ripped off. I didn't get cheated. Indeed, your life has real worth as Krishna's servant. How is our life bewildered? We should try to understand that. Muchakunda, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam in Krishna Lila, gives such an extraordinary presentation of what it's like to be plundered, ripped off by time. How does that particular chapter in Bhagavatam begin? It begins with Kalyavana and Jarasandha attacking at the same time. Krishna has to do something. Krishna actually doesn't have to do anything, but enjoying the Leela like he has to do something. Oh, what will happen if I'm dealing with Jarasandha? Then Kalyavana will plunder and vice versa. I have to do something to protect the Yadu dynasty. And so Krishna builds Dwarka. And then he emerges from Mathura. The Bhagavatam describes like the rising moon. And Kalyavana, the demon, sees the beauty of the Lord, just as Narada Muni had described to him. He sees the Lord in his four-handed Vishnu form. He sees the yellow dhoti, the dark blue complexion. Kalyavana notes, indeed, this is a beautiful person. But the acharyas explain he can't taste that beauty because he's a demon. In other words, he sees, but it doesn't touch him. There's no interactive transformation in him due to seeing the beauty of the Lord, because he's a demon. In other words, he sees, but he actually doesn't see. So, he wants to fight Krishna. As you know, he begins to follow Krishna on foot because he sees the Lord is walking without any weapons. So, Kalyavana gets off his chariot, puts down his weapons, and begins to pursue the Lord on foot. Now, it seems again and again that he almost has Krishna in his grip. But every time, the Lord is outside of his grasp, completely eluding him. Why does that happen? Even though Kalyavana, a mighty powerful warrior, is pursuing the Lord with great speed, he can't catch the Lord, who is casually walking over the battlefield. Why can't he catch the Lord? Because the Lord is outside the influence of time and Kalyavana is totally within the grip of time. So you have to understand when you hear that the Lord moves faster than the speed of wind or the speed of mind. What that means is he's beyond time calculation. But Kayavana is a creature under the influence of time. His body is composed of the influence of time, actions and reactions of time. So how is he going to catch Krishna, who has nothing to do with the time influence in terms of his being under it? The time influence is his own impersonal representation. So Krishna's outside of time, being pursued by someone who's completely within time. So there's no way that Kalyavana is going to catch Krishna, even though he thinks, I've almost got him, he's right within my grip now. But how does someone within time grip someone who's outside of time? This is the deep science of bhakti. And indeed, by performing devotional service, you'll also experience being outside of the grip of time. So Kalyavana pursues the Lord, and as you know, they wind up in a cave. And Kalyavana sees a sleeping person in the cave, and he knows exactly what's going on. Here is that Krishna pretending to be a sadhu, sleeping peacefully. So he walks right up to Krishna, what he thinks is Krishna, and gives him a mighty kick. You fake sadhu, you coward, running away from battle. And you know who the person turned out to be and what happened. That person whom he thought was Krishna turned out to be Muchukunda, who had been sleeping there in the cave for many yugas. Now, Muchukunda also demonstrates to you the power of time. He had gone to the heavenly planets many, many yugas before to fight on behalf of the demigods. He had a successful kingdom on earth, adored by his citizens. He had a queen, children. But selflessly, he went to the heavenly planets to fight on behalf of the demigods. Finally, the demigods got Kartikeya, a worthy general. And so Kartikeya personally told Muchukunda, all right, you've done enough. You can stop fighting now. But let me inform you of what's happened, why you've been on the heavenly planets, fighting on behalf of the demigods. The time on the heavenly planets is different than on the earth. You can't, what's the point in your going back to earth as a normal person? Everyone you knew has long ago passed away. Your wife, your children, your ministers, the people in your kingdom, they're all long gone because of the influence of time. You've been in the heavenly planets. Time is measured differently here. So what are you going to do now? Muchukunda was so tired. He was just thinking, I need to rest. And in order for me to rest properly, I have to make it so that not even Indra will dare wake me. It's like sometimes our temple managers, presidents, temple commanders, due to vigorous devotional service, like when there's a Rath Yatra or some festival or marathon, they need to rest. And just, look, Prabhu's, for a couple of days, just don't call me, don't knock on the door. So this is actually a great benediction in devotional service, to be so tired from giving Krishna everything. It's a luxurious feeling. But for Krishna's pleasure, you have to know when to rest. So Muchukunda, he decided, I need to rest, and I need a benediction that will keep Indra, even Indra, from waking me up again to fight more demons. So Kartikeya had told him, you know, we demigods can give you any benediction except liberation. So take your pick. Muchukunda said, I want to sleep and sleep and sleep. And if anyone dares awaken me with my vision, I can ignite the fire in their body, and so they'll burn to death by the fire raging out of control inside their own body. Now there's a more, there's a deeper explanation for Mucchakunda asking for this benediction. The Acharyas explain that Mucchakunda was a great devotee of the Lord, and he knew that in the future, Krishna would appear. He couldn't bear the separation. He couldn't bear the passing of time before Krishna would appear far in the future. So therefore, he's thinking, if I sleep until Krishna appears, the time will pass very quickly. But if I stay awake, all that time will go so slow, I can't bear it. I want to see my Lord. So that was the real reason why he wanted to just sleep and sleep and sleep. So, you know how he caused Kalyavana to burn to ashes by his glance. It is important to understand that it's not really that he burned Kalyavana. As Mucchakunda himself explained, Kalyavana was burned by his own sinful reactions. So Muchikunda's glance just set off that chain of sinful reactions. Mucchakunda, in his presentation to Krishna, he explained that. So now, he's awake. Kalyavana's burned to ashes, and Mucchakunda sees this most beautiful form in front of him, dissipating all the darkness of the cave. So he asks, who are you? Are you the Lord of Lords? Are you some demigod? Actually, you must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you're dissipating all the darkness of the cave. What are your activities? How have you appeared? How do you disappear? Please describe yourself to me. And then, to be respectful, Mucchakunda described himself, because he's speaking to a superior, so you just don't ask a superior, who are you, without presenting who you are. So he said like that, I'm Mucchakunda, I'm in Ikshvaku's dynasty. And then Krishna began to most beautifully and poetically explain himself. You ask who I am. Let me tell you that the greatest sages, the greatest rishis, they can't understand my appearance, my activities. Indeed, I have so many appearances, so many incarnations, so many activities. Even if someone through several lifetimes can count all the atoms that compose the earth, they'll never get to the end of all my appearances, all my activities. But anyway, since you've asked, let me tell you, in this particular appearance, I was invited by Brahma, who was concerned that the world is overburdened by demons. So that's why I'm here now in this particular appearance. You have pleased me by your devotional service. Now ask any benediction you want. You should know that anyone who's pleased me never has any wants. So, name your benediction. What do you want? Actually, this is Krishna testing his devotee for the benefit of other devotees. Krishna is actually offering Mucchakunda the possibility of a material benediction. Now, what would you say? The Lord says, anything you want, ask for it. Anyone who pleases me never is in want. What would you say? Now, you might immediately say, oh, I'd ask for pure Krishna consciousness. I'd ask for pure devotion. Be careful, because if our mind is full of material desires, those are the things that will come into our mind. In other words, it takes training to be able to seek a proper benediction. It takes qualification in order to give the right answer when the Lord asks, what do you want? Our whole Krishna conscious process is to train devotees how once again to deal with Krishna. We have forgotten how to deal with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We need training. We need therapy to bring our proper intelligence back. Muchakunda would not ask for anything material. And he began reciting his history. And his history reveals the power of time. He described how he was such a powerful emperor, riding here and there in his chariot, surrounded by huge armies, conquering all other kings. He described how he was so absorbed in his duties, thinking, this has to be done, that has to be done. This is a kind of pride, as Muchakunda reveals it, when you think, I have so many important tasks to do. My life is so busy. My life is so significant. I need to understand project management just to sort out my own life. I'm so important. This is a false pride that the material energy fills your heart and your mind with. I have many important things to do. You don't understand all the responsibilities I have, all the important tasks that I should achieve. So Muchakunda described himself as feeling this way. And then he says, very, very dramatically, in my pursuit of all my worldly duties, in my being overpowered by my opulence and fame, I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me. This is the paradox of material life. You don't see time plundering you at every moment. You forget about it, but time does not forget about you. Muchakunda described that time is like a serpent with its forked tongue, sticking out its forked tongue, seeing a mouse. The serpent's very hungry, ready to pounce on the mouse. The serpent is deadly in its accuracy. So similarly, Muchakunda describes Supreme Personality of God, its time factor, as insurpassable in its accuracy. A snake, Kala Sarpa, is a very good example for time, one that the Bhagavatam uses often. Snakes are very frightening. They almost have an air of invincibility. That's why people are so afraid of snakes. I heard a story of our godbrother, Shyamasundar, the original, the first Shyamasundar. He was in some country in Africa, I think Zambia, doing some business to maintain himself. And he was staying at the house of a very, very, very wealthy person. And he was describing where he was staying as just heavenly, just beautiful nature, fresh air, just beautiful scenery. And once, one day he was going back to his house, this very, very wealthy house where he was staying, doing some temporary work in that part of the world. And he looked behind him as he was about to open the front door, and there behind him was a venom-spitting viper. Do you know what a venom-spitting viper is? They don't have to bite you. They can just spit their poison at you from like 10 feet away. And if that poison touches any part of your body, you'll get very sick. But if it touches an open part of your body, you're dead. And the venom-spitting vipers, they aim for your eyes. They They spit their venom right in your eyes from 10 feet away, knowing if it gets in your eyes, you're a dead person. So he looked around. So I'm assuming that there was a venom-spitting viper. He didn't know what to do. But the servant there, a local, the servants always carry sticks, and they knew exactly what to do. Without wasting a split second, the servant just clubbed the viper to death with his stick. Because if he had hesitated for a split second, the viper would have spit. So he knew the art, as Prabhupada would say. He knew the art. Similarly, we have to know the art of how to deal with time. Kala Sarpa. Muchikunda describes that, I thought I was a big king, but then under the influence of time, the same body of the king will become ashes if it's burned in a crematorium fire. It'll become stool if it's eaten by dogs or other animals. Or it could be, it'll just turn into worms as it decomposes. This is done by time. So when we look at our watch, we should know that not only is the minute hand on the watch moving, or if you have a digital watch, the numbers are changing, your body is decomposing. The same body that you feel attached to now, the same body that you have hopes for, that have pleasure and good feelings, that same body under the influence of time becomes either worms, stool, or ashes. So Muchikunda is pointing this out. This is all happening by time. These are the effects of time. But then he makes a point which may be more difficult to understand. He says there's another effect of time besides bodily decomposition. What is that? During the day, I'm on my throne, and all the subordinate kings come and fall at my feet with their helmets. But what happens at night? At night, I go into my ladies' quarters, and I have to fall at their feet and beg for good sense gratification. So this is also the effect of time. Now, how can that be? How do you figure that's the effect of time? You would just say, well, you know, he's just under the control of his own senses. And, you know, he wants a good time. He has to go beg for it. But this is time because the hormones in the body function under the time factor. Just like when you were an 8 or 9 year old guy or girl, you did not worry about the opposite sex. But due to the influence of time, when you're 12 or 13, the hormones in your body change and you go wild. This is the effect of time. For a man, according to scientists, when the man is 22, he's at the peak of his hormone cycle. He's a burning volcano. Anyone 22 here? And from that peak is a very slow descent. How old are you yesterday, Dave? Okay. He's 22 this week. So, this is time. You're 8 or 9, you weren't thinking about the opposite sex. Then all of a sudden, all you can do is think of the opposite sex. This is all done by time. So Muchikunda figured this out. That when I have to go into the harem and fall at the feet of the queens, it's because of the time factor. That's pretty smart. He begged Krishna, just give me your loving devotional service. Just give me Krishna bhakti. That's the only benediction I want. And indeed, Krishna gave him the benediction that he would always, that Muchikunda would always think of him. That is the goal of our bhakti process, mamana bhava mad bhakto, to always think of Krishna. By always thinking of Krishna, you're outside the influence of time. So this is how powerful our process of devotional service is. It's doing the wonder of causing your escape from the cycle of repeated birth and death, causing your freedom from birth, old age, disease, and death. This actually happens in Krishna consciousness. As you stick to the process, you become deathless in that things may happen to your body, but your devotional service, one way or another, goes on, and Krishna gives you personal assurance. Never mind what happens to your body. Your devotional service will go on. That is the victory. That is defeat of time. Without that personal assurance from Krishna, you're going to be full of anxiety. Oh, what if I die now? What if I can't fulfill my plans? What if I haven't enjoyed enough? I don't want to become old before I enjoy enough. First I should enjoy enough, then I become old. If I'll enjoy enough, I won't mind becoming old. But the most horrible thing will be if I get old and I haven't enjoyed enough. But how do you know when you've enjoyed enough? Does Maya come up to you and say, okay, you had your quota, be satisfied? No, it doesn't work like that. You never think you had enough. Never. It's not the nature of the material energy to give you satiation. Now, to make you feel that, okay, that's it, enough is enough. You always want more. You're greedy for more. In this way, you'll never be able to see the time factor acting because of attachment, because of greed, and because of pride in burdening yourself with so many responsibilities and duties that you've imagined are so necessary. But we can learn so much from Muchakunda's analysis. I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me.